Okay, you there? Hello. Try to call now. Okay, Bill, are you there? All right, in case anybody's out there, we've been going through some modifications with the radio station. So we're waiting to get everything straightened out.
Okay, joining you now. Joining you now. Finally,
okay.
We're able to get back on, and some unknown reason, and I hate to talk about this on the air,
But we're good.
Program.
We're good.
I told them.
So let's
well,
go.
All right, everybody. All right.
Technical thing.
Yes.
How are you, Mr. Billy?
I am doing very, very, very well.
Always good.
Great. Now, the name of the program, guys, is Did You Know? So, Did You Know? More Facts About Motown with Mr. Billy Wilson.
That's right.
Know. Yeah. And it's going to be very interesting. So, get with it. And we can start talking, Billy. I am very happy to have you back on to be a part of what you're doing here. And also thanks goes out to Denise. And our listeners, we once again apologize for the technical difficulties, but we are doing a lot of changes with the radio station. We're getting new stuff in. So there's going to be a few technical problems here and there. So just bear with us and we'll be straight. All right, Billy, back to you, my friend.
Well, all right, ready. Well, we, this particular show, I don't do this very often. Back in the day, I used to have a blog, and about every other day, I would put 10 facts about Motown that most people did not know. And the reason I started the blog is because I had one of my other Motown associates who I thought knew more than I did start a blog. She started that particular blog. But when she quit, I thought, wow, what am I going to do now? Well, I guess I'll start my own blog. So you always have to be careful about starting these kind of things because sometimes you don't know what's the truth and what's not. But once I started the blog, it was called Motown, Did You Know? Did you know that Berry Gordy had a mansion in Detroit? That would be the question. The answer would be, not only did he have a mansion in Detroit, but he owned numerous properties in Detroit. And even some of the properties, the Motown stars lived in those properties. And there are a couple of organizations here in Detroit that will give you a tour of all the Motown properties. So these kind of questions are the type of questions and answers I try to go through with you know, some of the people. Today, we're going to talk about Barry Gordy, as a matter of fact. Did you know that Barry Gordy dropped out of school in his junior year, and he became a professional boxer? Now, of course, he became a professional boxer because Joe Louis, who was from Detroit, was the popular boxer of his day. He was the Muhammad Ali of his day. So, of course, Barry got excited. Jackie Wilson was a boxer also about the same time period. Barry won a couple of rounds, a few sessions. I think he got beat up one good time and he quit. And so after that, he went to the Army. Barry Gordy is a veteran. A lot of people don't know that. And then after he was a veteran in the Korean War. So after that, he opened a jazz record store. Another did you know moment. Did you know that Barry Gordy started a jazz record store? Also, Barry Gordy liked jazz music. He really wasn't into R&B music when he started. The record company was called 3D Record Mart, and it was financed by Barry Gordy's family. Now, everybody remembers that Barry Gordy borrowed money from his family, the family fund, which I'll probably get into that later. But the family fund allowed a lot of the relatives either start a business or do something beneficial for the family. And Barry Gordy's family was very productive because they had their father had a grocery store. Barry and his family, they all worked at the store. The father also, he done construction work. Matter of fact, the very first flooring that was put in the basement of the Motown, what's now the Motown Museum, became the Motown Studio. Barry Gordy's father, Barry Sr., all of the flooring, because that apparently that basement was dirt. When you go to the Motown Museum now, you see a nice little floor that everybody could walk on, but originally, it was a dirt floor.
Wow. And it's a humble beginning.
A real one.
Humble beginning. Because you would never guess that, you know, Barry Gordy, the way, you know, you explained he started out. I mean, wow. I mean, it's amazing.
That's right.
You know, what
That's right.
what you learned as you come up.
And something else that's interesting is that when I was talking with David Ruffin, apparently when Barry started out, David was with the Gordy family. He said that he lived with them, and he helped.
Wow.
He helped Berry Sr. to put the floor in.
Now, wow.
And he wasn't the only one. Barrett Strong said that he did too. He helped with Berry Sr. to put the flooring in at the Motown Studios. These people were here. They were there before a lot of the people we know as the Motown celebrities. So,
wow. That's good. That's awesome.
It is. So, the interesting portion is Barry's wife, Thelma, she had Barry's first children, and Barry was apparently a kind father, but he was a thinker. You know, he was thinking about how to make money. He wasn't a worker like many of his other family members were. They were hard work. Mm-hmm. Barry was the thinking type. He didn't want to have to work too hard. Barry learned to work resourcefully. And if you look at his life as he got older and he's got richer and as he developed the company, Barry hired people that knew more than he did about certain things. Now, that's the skill that most black people don't do. You know, most of the time we want to be it all and know everything.
Oh, yeah.
But Barry hired people that had skills in particular areas and used them in those specific areas.
Wow.
Okay.
He was very intelligent then. Very intelligent. Because
yeah.
I know that we always looked up to Berry Gordy.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And let's, on this note, let's go to a commercial break, and we'll be back with more. This is going to be really interesting because a lot of things I didn't know. In fact, I knew that he had a record store, but the other part of it, far as the family chipping in, I don't think I remembered that part. But it's going to be interesting, so we're going to move on. We're going to talk about a lot of different things, but we're going to move on. Let's go to commercial break, and we'll be right back with Billy and Billy, Motown alumni.
Yes.
Shalom, everyone. This is the host of the Black Jewish Queen Life Chat, Dr. Denise Gotadis. I am here to share with you and to announce on-demand best-selling book written by the owner, creator, and the writer of The Matrix and The Terminator, Oscar award-winning Sophia Stewart. If you love her movies, you will love her books. And here is a list of those books that are now available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The first book is The Third Eye. The second book is The Mother of the Matrix. The third book is Matrix Trivia. And her latest book, which is the fourth book, is The Evolution of Conscience, Cracking the Genetic Code. This is The Matrix 4 book. These books are on demand. Order your copy today. They are now available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon booksellers.
You are listening to CRS Radio Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy. And today's program is about Did You Know? More Motown information with Mr. Billy Wilson and Mr. Billy Tappan.
And we're back here in the house. Thank you for everybody that's out there that's listening. We've been through a few situations, but we're straight now. So we're going to get back to the story with Billy, the president of the Motown alumni. So, Billy, we're back, and let's go ahead and go back in.
Well, all right now. You know, the Berry Gordy name was passed down to four generations. It was his Barry's great-grandfather, Berry Gordy. His father was Berry Gordy. Obviously, he was Berry Gordy Jr. And he had a son that was Berry the Fourth, Berry Gordy the Fourth.
Okay.
And he had more children after that. I'll get into that later. But a lot of people don't know, Motown, Did You Know, that Berry's family, Milledgeville, Georgia. A lot of people don't know about that town. That's a little dinky little town in Georgia, but at least it was. It has grown substantially since then, but Berry's people are from Georgia. And Berry was born, he also, Berry himself was born in Detroit. 1929. His mother, Bertha, and Barry Sr., they moved here to Detroit at the time, just before his birth. And his father ran a plaster contracting business. He was into construction. His mother sold insurance and real estate. So, and they also owned a grocery store and a printing company. During that time and period, his family would have been considered rich by black standards. So Barry did not come from the hood. People had stuff going on. All the kids had a job. And if they didn't have a job, Barry Gordy Jr. made sure that they got some work going on. And because of that, you kind of can see how the Gordy family helped with his infrastructure. Because as I told you before, when he started his record store, everybody thought that Barry only borrowed money to create Motown Records. But that's not true. As I said in the before the commercial, Barry borrowed money to start that record store, that jazz record store that failed. And so Barry had to come back a second time to borrow money. So, you know, everybody looked at him out the corner of their eye.
Right, right.
I know I would. And so I'm not going to get to that right now, because that's just another juicy piece of the story that I want to tell. So Barry, after he came back from the Army, he tried to, you know, at some point in time, Barry tried to be a pimp, because he's seen all these cool guys that look like they had a lot of money on the street. But Barry said himself, he said he couldn't even be a good pimp, because he was always feeling sorry for all of the girls that he. You know, he ended up giving all the money away.
Right.
He was a terrible pimp.
Right.
And apparently they didn't mind taking advantage of it. You know. So anyway, Barry ended up working in the factory. He started working in the factory, but the problem was he was so bored that he was writing songs.
I hear you. I did the same thing.
Yeah. And while he was working at the factory, not only was he writing songs, but he would submit his songs to magazines and contests and singers. Well, eventually, his sister Gwen introduced him to Jackie Wilson's manager, Al Green.
Okay.
Now, this ain't the black Al Green that we all know. This
right.
This is a white Al Green.
Right.
And Al Green took Mary, Gwen, his sister, and Billy McHale, which is Barry's friend. He took them all in. Because, you know, by that time, Barry had his factory songs. He had enough factory songs that he could kind of impress people that he was a songwriter.
Right.
Even though he wasn't, he impressed enough people. So, and that this was in the mid-50s. But it wasn't until 1957 that he became Jackie Wilson's songwriter. And the very first song that he wrote for Jackie was Reek Petite. And he co-wrote that with his sister, Gwen Gordy, and Billy Davis, who, by the way, eventually he called himself Tyran Carlo. That was his pseudonym.
Okay.
And Reek Petite became like a moderate local hit. And Barry earned $1,000 for that song.
Wow.
So he was, and he, keep in mind, he was working at the factory. He didn't make that. He didn't make that much at the factory. So it's obvious you know what he did. He quit that factory job so fast, I don't think the door closed by the time he got out of before he got off the property. The time he opened the door and ran out the door, he was already on the sidewalk running down the street. And then the factory door closed.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like I did. Now, was he able to sing at all? Was he a singer?
No, he wasn't a singer.
I didn't think so.
He was strictly a songwriter.
Okay. Yeah, I get it, you know. Because sometimes, you know, as a songwriter, in some cases, like with myself, I've always worked with writers that were actually singers themselves, I co-write with them. And it makes it a lot easier for me as a singer to be able to do it that way. But some people are different. They can take a track. And I can also do it to take a track and just, you know, go along with the writers, you know, the way.
Right.
Yes, I get that. But I swear to God, I thought maybe somewhat of a singer, but no.
Were you a musician also?
No, just singer.
I see.
Singer. Yep.
So
I should have
anyway,
kept up my music, you know.
Anyway, Barry stayed with Jackie Wilson for 2 years. He wrote the hit To Be Loved, Lonely Teardrops.
I remember them, yeah.
That's Why I Love You So. And I'll Be Satisfied.
Yeah.
He also named his book To Be Loved after the Jackie Wilson song.
Okay.
So in that perspective, he you know, he was popular. He was popping amongst the songwriters of his time.
Oh, no doubt.
He wrote for Jackie Wilson, and he wrote for Jackie Wilson, and Jackie was Mr. Entertainer, and all the women were throwing their draws on stage and everything.
I remember them days, yeah.
Wow.
He was probably one of the hottest,
you know,
back in them days, Jackie Wilson. I mean, because of his ability, his look, and he was a true showman. So when you seen him, you seen the whole situation. I mean, they just really loved him and was all over that guy. So, yeah, he was a big loss back then, you know.
Yeah. So, his very first production was a song called "Oh Shucks."
Okay.
By Five Stars, and it was released on this little dinky label called Mark X Label. So, you know, he started getting his foot in the water a bit. Eventually, mm-hmm. was introduced to Smokey Robinson, his group. They, at the time, they called themselves the Matadors. Yeah, they were called the Matadors. This is the Miracle, the previous to being called the Miracles, they were the Matadors. And they came in and auditioned at Jackie Wilson's company, record company. Well, Jackie and his group of people, they didn't like him. They didn't like the group. So they turned him down. But Barry, not only did he like the group, but they had a cute woman in the group. And Barry was kind of attracted to her.
Right.
So what he did, he followed them out. And a lot of people don't know he was attracted to her, but he knew he had to talk to the band members to even get to know her.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked Smokey about his song, and apparently Smokey had a notebook full of lyrics, and He asked Smokey to, you know, recite some of his songs. And, of course, he did. And Barry critiqued it like a professional would, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind, he still was liking that cute girl that was in his group, that was in Smokey's band.
Right.
Yeah.
So that band had a little bit of clout because of her. Now, the question would be, and this is something that I probably should ask Barry. You know, I know nobody asked this kind of question. If they didn't have Claudette Robinson, Claudette Rogers, because she was Bobby Rogers' cousin, Bobby Rogers of the Miracle.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't have her, would he have run out to chase that group down to listen to their songs? I don't think so.
Okay.
I think Claudette had everything to do. Of course, this is my analysis, of course. But Claudette had everything to do with why Barry chased them down. Yeah, I don't think you're because they just had fabulous voices.
All right.
But in the process, Barry ended up being their manager. And while he was their manager, you know, he tried to be a manager to him. I don't think managing suited him well, but he was he ended up being a very good friend of Smokey. And when Barry first started, they gave him a check for $1,000. But once he started becoming a songwriter, you know, the money started depleting more and more, and he had to wait for his royalties. That's when he found out the horrors of the music industry at that time in particular, because when he got his first good royalty paycheck, which was quite a few months later, he got a whole $3.
Right. At this point, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back with the Motown and Motown with Billy and Billy. We'll be right back.
We'll be back.
From author Dr. Denise Gotatis comes a self-help guide that will give you valuable information about the world around you in ways never imagined. The Metaphysical God in Relation to His Creation. Available on Amazon. In this must-read book, you will learn about your importance in the world and the metaphysical universe around you. You will be introduced to the Metaphysical God who has a relationship with you and those around you. Whether you are aware of this or not, you come into contact with Him daily. He is omnipresent metaphysically. He is in and outside of His creation. And what does a metaphysical God have to do with you and the creation around you? You are a very big piece of a huge puzzle. The Metaphysical God in Relation to His Creator from author Dr. Denise Gotatis is available on Amazon. Order your copy right now.
This is CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
And we are back. And Billy, go ahead and finish up.
Okay. So, so after that $3 check, and Smokey was telling Barry, "Look, man, you might as well start your own label if you're going to be getting that little dinky amount of money." So that's what Barry decided to do. And in the process of doing that, this is in 1958, he was auditioning young people for his new record label he was putting together. And these two women came in, Rainoma Lyles and Alice Mayberry. And they came in and auditioned for Barry's label. Now, Barry wasn't impressed with the two of them at all. But this one little girl, she seemed to have pretty good voice, and she almost had perfect pitch. So Barry showed a little bit of interest in her. Eventually, he hired her to prepare music, and because she knew how to read music. And as time had gone on, he eventually married her.
Okay.
And they started with, it's called the Ray Bear Music Writing Company. They wrote they wrote music for other people.
Okay.
So that was the first business that they had done. He produced his first production was with a guy named Herman Griffin. The song was "I Need You," and
okay.
He wrote the song on the HOB label. The HOB stands for House of Beauty.
Okay.
And that was the publishing company. That was through Berry Gordy's publishing company, Jobet. He named Jobet out of acronyms of his children's name.
Okay.
His first children.
Mm-hmm.
And also a song called "I Need You" was also the first recording credited to the Ray Bear Voices. Now, a lot of people think that the Ray Bear Voices were the group called Andantes. You hear those pretty voices in the background a lot of the times, like the Supremes have a lot of pretty voices. The later Marvelettes had the pretty voices. Those pretty voices were the Andantes, the three women that sung. They were studio background singers. They sung for everybody. There was the previous group was called the Ray Bear Singers, which were a couple of the guys and Raynoma, Barry's then wife. That was the first singing group. Now throughout the years, the Originals, Martha and the Vandellas, the Supremes, they were all background singers for various groups. Martha and the Vandellas, they were originally Marvin Gaye's background singers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was Marvin Gaye and the Vandellas. And that's how they went on the road.
That's interesting. Wow.
Well, I didn't
really get that.
Yep. And the Supreme back.
What year was that?
About 63-ish.
Okay.
Something like that.
Pretty young.
Yeah. So eventually, and mind you, Berry Gordy's first record label, his first record label, was called Ray Bear, the Ray Bear label.
Oh.
Ray meaning Raynoma, Bear meaning
okay.
Berry Gordy.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
The Ray Bear label, they only had one artist. I mean, this guy is so unknown, it's unbelievable. And more than likely, his records are worth thousands of dollars because he's that unknown. But the guy's name was called Wade Jones, and he had a single called I Can't Concentrate.
And now, name again what?
The name of the guy was Wade Jones.
Yeah.
And,
Wade?
And the song, Wade, W-A-D-E.
Okay.
The song was "I Can't Concentrate." It's the
okay.
only song on that label. That's the only song that we know that comes from that label. That song is worth thousands of dollars if you could find it.
Man.
Thousands and thousands of dollars.
You hear that, people?
Oh.
So they're going to be looking now.
I'm going to be looking for thousands. And, matter of fact, you can take the song to, like, Sotheby's or Crystal's auction, and you very well could get up into the five digits.
Okay.
Wow.
Of the Sotheby's or Crystal's auction. That's how rare that song is.
Okay, yeah, I bet it is, man. You know, I don't even think in my collections that my mom and dad have, I don't think they even have that. And I hadn't been through that collection in a while.
Wow.
So I have to look through there.
Those thrift stores, you hit those have all kinds of old records in them. It's a treasure trove of records, especially like in Wisconsin, they have bins full of old records, old Motown records.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that there are certain Motown records. What's fun is that for the white consumers, these records are extremely valuable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. These records are extremely valuable.
Yeah.
But for black consumers, they use them as frisbees and maybe when you put your cup on them on the table. cup holders, you know. Barry Gordy started Tamla Records before he started Ray Bear Records. He started that first, but Tamla Records came afterwards. Tamla was named after his children. And he didn't originally, there was a song called Tammy by Doris Day.
Oh, okay.
You remember that song, Tabby?
Yeah.
And so he wanted to name his record label Tammy. But somebody had that name already.
Okay.
So he not only did he not use the name, he just decided, okay, we're going to name this record label after my children. So, which he did, obviously. Let me back up a little bit. What's interesting about the Ray Bear label, the Ray Bear label was developed 2 months before the Motown record label was developed. 2 months before, but the other subsidiary label was the Tamla label, which was the primary label, and up underneath the Tamla label was the Motown label. These were subsidiaries of the Tamla label, Motown, Ray Bear, all of those. So Motown was put together before they incorporated. So basically it was a DBA originally. And when they incorporated, I believe it was April of 1959. I think if you go to the Motown Museum, look on the plaque. it will tell you that it was actually incorporated April of 1959.
All right.
So, and also, the Tamla record, it didn't start location where the museum is here in Detroit. It started on a street called Gladstone Street. And eventually, Berry Gordy moved to the Hitsville label that where the Motown is right now. And Berry lived upstairs from the studio. His family, his entire family, were upstairs in the studio. So he lived at the studio.
Okay.
And the studio doors were open 24/7. So if
they're pumping them out.
Wanted, they were open 24.
Wow.
Obviously, in the very early years, the doors weren't open that much because he didn't have a lot of singers, songwriters at that time. But most people don't realize he didn't put the company together for singers. The primary purpose of singers was to sing his songs, but he didn't put the company together for singers. He put it together for songwriters. Singers were secondary. You know, you got to have your singers to present the songs to the audience, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But Berry Gordy was a songwriter. So he got people that wrote songs. His producers, people, they learned how to produce right there at Berry's studio. Because it was a bigger studio. So they could sit there all night long and learn some crap.
Okay. Well, at this point, let's take a break, and we'll come back and finish up where we left off at. And also, I have something I'd like to say when we come back in. All right, we'll be right back.
All right, we'll be back.
Come on. When the blazing sun comes up, no escaping from the rays. Feel the fire is engulfing through the smoke and through the haze. I will leave you all amazed. Got you digging your own grave in this revival. Top of rivals, there's no chance of your survival. To the throne I am entitled, and I'll strip you of your title. I'm the king, you are the peasant. There's no time for second guesses. I am death, I'm a child from the God above. I am death, make it on my own, don't need no press. I am death, my future's fixed, to the top I'll grow. I am death, let us eat and watch this giant grow. The need that I am feeding, what the industry is needing, is new blood flow through the system to rejuvenate the rhythm. So much hell I'm gonna give the mess, I'm busting out this prison. Listed as an unforgiving, as I carry out the sin. Execution on the gallows, you're so angry and you're callous. As the hammer, it is falling, so horrendous and enthralling. Like a Roman gladiator, I'm the ultimate elator. As the crowd is going wild, now the casualties compile. Take you out with different styles, I'm a child of the heaven. And the sun god is a weapon, you'll be raised to get you tripping. And I burn you all to vapors, you're a flammable as paper. As I'm pulling off escape, I got you evading the danger. Now you're drowning in confusion, you've been living in delusion. Terrified, you're seeing clearly that you're never getting near me. I will beat you all severely, everyone's paying dearly. Merely told you what I mean, and like a hyper beast of singing. Every angle getting covered, suffocated, and you're smothered by the power overtaken as the thunder lord of work. When the blazing sun comes up, no escaping from the rage. Feel the fire, it's been gulping through the smoke and through the haze. I will leave you all amazed, got you digging your own grave. In this revival, top of rivals, there's no chance of your survival. To the throne, I am entitled. There's a strip you of your title. I'm the king, you are the peasant. There's no time for second guessing. I am death, I'm a child from the god above. I am death, make it on my own, don't need no crush. I am death, my future's fixed to the top. giant quarrel. Actually, I will attack you with this telekinetic vacuum. The reality of thinking brings a vision in a being. You're amazed by what you're seeing, not the average human being. And I wouldn't change a thing, very different is the king. Won't be ducking when I swing, and I knock you out the ring on everything, that's what it is. Getting closer to the ledge, I will never lose my edge. Now you're falling to your doom, and you're doling down the stairs like a bull that's being red. With two holes up on his head, and I'm charging your defense. And you couldn't go the length, you don't equal to a tenth. I push the level to 100 in this battle that you won. And play no game with opposition, take you up, that is my mission. Yeah. Play no games with opposition, take you off, that is my mercy. When the blazing sun comes up, no escaping from the rays. Feel the fire is engulfing through the smoke and through the haze. I will leave you all amazed, got you digging your own grave. In this revival, topple rivals, there's no chance of your survival. To the throne I am entitled, as I strip you of your title. I'm the king, you are the peasant, there's no time for second guesses. I am dirt, I'm a child from the God above. I am dirt, make it on my own, don't need no crutch. I am dirt, future fixed, to the top I'll go. I am dirt, plant the seed and watch this giant grow. When the blazing sun comes up, no escaping from the rays. Feel the fire is engulfing through the smoke and through the haze. I will leave you all amazed, got you digging your own grave. In this revival, top of rivals, there's no chance of your survival. To the throne I am entitled, and I strip you of your title. I'm the king, you are the peasant, there's no time for second guesses. I am dead, I'm a child from the God above. I am dead, make it on my own, don't need no crutch. I am dead, my future's fixed, till the top I'll go. I am dead, plant the seed and watch this giant grow. I am dead, sir.
Ciao. I did this hit on purpose, went right over their heads, I'm spaced out. There's no gravity under my leg, I'm abusing this substance. Every other puppets, thoughts that perpetuate the greatness of my hustling. Can't judge what y'all listen to, this product will speak for me. All I do is rock shit, show you how it needs to be. Gun rule, hold on, ties at the wheel again. Giving you that no, I can't be fucked with, feel again. My fitness on 10, my kids are my priority. There is no half-stepping, I have to give you all of me. Use in my flow, my wisdom is ageless. Knowledge of the world forces me to speak abrasive. Dumbing down for revenue, that choice is always personal. All I rap is reality, you stuck in the virtual. Easy on the drugs, sober up, this life is temporary. Not programmed for us to win, I hope you listen clearly. Rich or you poor, you Christian or you Muslim. Hard work and taxpayer, or you trapping with the hoodlums. Get your money, young people, respect why you doing it. Trust no one, those close will always ruin shit. Love yourself first, everything comes after. Can't please the world, your concerns become disasters. Family is important, so I give you these warnings. What I tell you is intentional to help you get performance. All on purpose, you heard it, I did this shit on purpose. Track on creatine, a message with a purpose. Hated on that man, tried to hurt him on purpose. Backfire, being jealous, got you murdered on purpose. He loved her, she's married, head covered on purpose. He's faithful, loyal, don't fuck him on purpose. I'm dangerous, my end game is done with a purpose. You thinking and you listening, that sums up my purpose. On purpose. Damn, the streets needed this, I hope your weed is lit. Get rid of all that music that you listen to that's meaningless. Ties on the radio, nostalgia, black unicorn. Paper fused saber to eighth wonder born in human form. Wealthy boy, warlord, Africa's assassin. Street hop, 40 on me while hitting the backspin. This new wave has a brother rising like the morning tide. Don't worry about the plans that I have, they've been all divided. Prayer made in public, beliefs are for everyone. I can't sit wishing on a dream that will never come. Mouth to feed's an understatement, money above all things. Holds you accountable for people you know starving. Therefore the papers multiplied a couple hundred times. It's for the greater good of my hood, so it's justified. My ancestors never had their hands on an AR aim. Send a mask as these colonizing rant settlers. That's just a metaphor of how I'm Malcolm at the window with an AK. And my mood is, I refuse to let up. Compromise just doesn't exist. It can never be as long as I'm black in America. You can never sleep. Wolves hide in plain sight, they just wear the sheep. Grin and bear the teeth, prepared to eat who's ever weak. Don't you ever think you're exempt and you're out of touch. Public enemy, number one, they have it out for us.
This is CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
And we are back. Billy, let's go ahead. I was going to say something before we go back to the conversation because it kind of hit me. When I was younger, I was about 17 years old, and I had a friend of mine that his, I think it was his aunt and uncle, that had one of those mansions, two houses from Barry. And we'd go down there and stay, and they actually had maids. You know, I'm like, this is just crazy. You know, we go down there in the summertime and stay two or three days. And every once in a while I'd see, they said, well, Barry stays at that house right there. Every once in a while I'd see a car pull out, but never had a chance to meet him. And that'd been a wonderful situation. But that's just one of the things that happened to me in terms of that first house he had.
Yeah.
The second house.
The Boston, that in Detroit,
yeah.
That's called the Boston Edison area.
Exactly. I remember that distinctly now. But they were huge houses. They were real big-sized houses. And it's just kind of ironic because, you know, we all come from Grand Rapids, and it's like he had an aunt that stayed down, aunt and uncle. We went down there, and I'm thinking it's going to be a regular house, and it was a mansion. I'm like, okay. You know?
Yeah.
I felt like the fresh print.
those on that side of the street were all mansions.
Right.
You know, anybody lives on that side of the street, you know they were rolling with the dough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They was just coming on strong, you know, because that had to be like maybe 69. Yeah, it was about 69.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's exactly when it was.
Well, by that time, Barry had moved to California. So they probably wouldn't have seen him that much during that time period.
Right.
About 68, 69, 70, he was beginning to make his transition to California.
Okay.
But he kept the house.
What year did they move to California?
Well, I think he officially moved by 1970.
Okay. Yep, I do remember. Yep.
You know. So Barry was, and by that time, you know, in the early years, Motown was 100% black. But the very first white person to be involved with Motown was Al Abrams.
Okay.
And Al was a Jewish man from Hamtramck, Michigan, which, Detroit metropolitan area, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he was about 17 years old. I think that's what he told me he was. And he didn't know what he was doing, but he heard that this company needed, you know, was hiring. So Barry really didn't want to hire a white guy. Not really. So Barry gave him this record from this guy. Now, my description of this guy probably is not true, but he was a guy from Czechoslovakia, and he called himself making an R&B song.
Mm-hmm.
So Barry told Al Abrams if he could get that song played on the black radio station, he'll hire him.
Okay.
So so Al went to the radio station, And I'll be darned if he didn't get them to play that song. Now, Barry said that he was driving down the street getting ready to go to Belle Isle, which is, you know, the popular park here in Detroit for black folks. And he turned on the radio and he heard his Czechoslovakian guy's song. He couldn't believe it. So he turned the car around, went back to his home, and who was standing on the porch waiting for him? Al Abrams.
Oh,
awesome. What kind of song was it?
It was a Czechoslovakian guy trying to sing black music.
Oh, my God. What did it sound like?
It sucked, of course. But
you got him.
Well, at least
you got
he was trying.
Yeah. Jesus, man, that guy can do that.
Yeah. So, obviously, Barry kept his word. Al Abrams became the national director, press agent for Motown. He was the very first white guy signed for the label. It wasn't till about maybe less than a year later he signed Barney Ellis, the marketing director for the record company.
Okay.
And those two were the introduction to white people for Motown. Because it was white people. Motown eventually hired an entire white marketing staff. And they got that marketing staff through Barney Ellis. Because Barney, he worked for one of the biggest music distribution companies here in Michigan. Handelman, the company was called Handelman. And so Barney originally didn't want to come work from these Negroes. Not originally.
Nope.
But Barry was so humble. And like I told you before, Barry, he got people that knew more about things than he did.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Barney, he was the man at Handelman. And Barney, I think one of the key things that got Barney interested, other than Barry's humble personality, Barney said, "Barry, do you know how to golf?" And Barry said, "Golf?" I'm paraphrasing everything.
Okay.
Barry said, "Golf? You know black people don't golf." He said, "If you want to socialize with white people and you want to be a part of white people's business, you better learn how to golf."
Okay.
And in the process of that, not only did he learn how to golf, he had Marvin Gaye and Harvey Fuqua and other Motowners. They all learned how to golf. And he was right. Black people, at that time, black people did not golf. We couldn't tell you not one person that was popular on the golf course.
Hmm.
Wow.
Motown stars, but the psychology of it, evolved around golfing. Now, why is that important? Golfers like to bet each other. Now, the one thing about men as a whole, we are competitive with each other.
Right.
Even if we don't like you, we can't stand your guts, and your mama wore army boots.
Right.
We will still compete with you.
That's right.
If it's a competition. And
sure.
And we might even like you after we whoop your butt.
Right. Exactly.
And the person who butt you whoop, he'll come back just to try to whoop your butt later.
Well, at this time, we're going to go to a commercial break, and we'll be right back with Billy and Billy, Motown alumni, and also Billy, the president of Motown alumni. We'll be right back to continue this conversation because it's getting interesting. All right, we'll be right back.
This is CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
Thank you.
This is CRS Radio, the Knowledge Station. You are listening to Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy.
And we are back with Motown Legends and Alumni with Billy and Billy. And we are talking about Did You Know? That is our topic today with Mr. Billy Wilson and Mr. Billy Tappan. And Mr. Billy, I know you had a bit more to say before the break.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was just thinking.
Yeah.
There's a couple of popular groups such as the Supremes, the Vandellas, the Marvelettes. Of course, they all have some Did You Know stuff. For example, the Supremes. Now we all know that, at least on us Motown fans, we know that the Supremes' original name was the Primettes. They were named after the group, the Primes, who was Paul Williams and Eddie Kendricks of the Temptations. They had a group called the Primes. And they called themselves grooming this girl group, their sister group, the Primettes. And which all of those girls were members of the Supremes. There was one extra girl. Her name was Betty McLown. She was dating Paul Williams, who eventually became a part of the Temptations.
Oh, okay.
And she was also the lead singer of the group. Now, eventually she left for one reason or another. And so the Supremes got another girl. Her name was Barbara Martin, who, by the way, actually died a couple of years ago.
Oh.
Once she disappeared off the market, nobody else heard about her until just a couple of years ago. And I didn't even know that she was still alive until somebody told me. I don't remember. One of the fans had told me that she was alive. But at the time that they told me, she had just died. But Barbara Martin, man. See, there were four Supremes girls. When they finally named themselves the Supremes, Betty McLown was still in the group when they named themselves the Supremes. And Betty McLown, she had to quit. Now, I believe she predominantly quit because she was pregnant.
Oh.
So Barbara Martin took her place. In many of the historic early year pictures, you'll see Barbara Martin as the fourth Supreme. Now, both girls sung on a couple of the Supremes' early recordings.
Okay.
Both girls. But eventually, Barbara Martin quit, and they just decided not to get another girl. And bada boom, bada bing, you had the Supremes, the three women for the Supremes. And throughout the years, periodically, be, if one of the Supremes couldn't make it, one of the Andantes, the background singing group for Motown Records, one of those girls would take that woman's place. So if Mary couldn't make it, the Andantes, one of the Andantes would take her place.
Oh, okay.
And
that's cool.
Can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Hey, my aunt has been, she loves Martha Reeves. And I know we have some stuff scheduled, but I would love to have her on so my aunt can at least talk to her. Because that's one of her, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas were her favorite group. So if we can arrange that, that'd be really nice. I'd like to give her that gift, you know, to really lighten up her day. Go ahead.
I got to talk to Martha tomorrow.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask her whether she'll come on the show next week.
Yeah, because she's been asking me. I says, you know what, I'm going to talk to Billy and see whether we can make that happen for her, because I know that she is a very big fan of hers. I actually sent a picture of me and Martha the other day. Of me and her, we took it at the event we were at.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Martha just done a picture signing here in Detroit. I don't think she's done one in a very long time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's see what we can do on that. But in closing, I think we need to talk about some things real quick in terms of what we're doing. We're actually trying to shout out to all independent artists that are looking for airplay. We have several stations, and we've got tomorrow night. Who do we have for tomorrow night? That's going to be a Wednesday, and I don't know whether we got anybody on Wednesday or not, but we're going to have a lot of things going on. So let's do this. We're just shouting out to all the independents out there. And anytime anybody wants to take and call in, we're on from 8 to 10, and it's Billy and Billy, Motown alumni. And we'll have some great things coming at you. And any last words, Billy?
Yeah, the world of Motown blends into the general world of music. Motown was so influential for Black culture that you could see its reach with many groups of the 70s, particularly the group of the late 60s and the early 70s. Those groups were well influenced by Motown. You know, the Shy Lights, the Dramatics, most of the Philly groups. I remember the duo songwriting group from the Philly. Gamble and Huff. They were talking about Motown. They said, you know, it was, the guy said, me and Gamble, it was just me and him during the songwriting process. He said, but Motown, they came down to our studio one time, and when they got off the bus, man, they brought a whole army of people. He said that impressed them so much. Motown just brought, it seemed like they brought the entire studio down to their studio.
Oh, wow.
But that showed the impact of Motown in Black music. Motown looked powerful. They looked like they had money. And that was intentional. And that's what I tell these young people today. Fake it till you make it. You certainly can fake it. And you certainly, as people look at you, what they see may not be who you are. You know, I got a philosophy. Who you are is different than who you've become.
Wow.
Correct.
Who you are is really that humble, innocent person that don't want to hurt nobody and don't want to cause any problems. But who you become is based on all the trials and tribulations you went through to become an adult.
And that is right. To chime out. So, Billy, Denise, we thank you very much. And as for next week, we'll be coming back at you. Hopefully we'll have something real special. As usual, we have something special all the time. So let's go ahead and call the night and say good night to the fans. Good night, everybody, and have a blessed night, day, or evening. Or afternoon, excuse me.
Good night.
All right, thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.